Welcome. A lot of storylines to talk about in the Bundesliga, but this time we are very grateful that you chose one of the ones that we talk about. Plus, Stuttgart made a coaching change, but is this going to stop their losing run? We also give our final impressions of the Aubameyang saga, since it seems to have reached its final chapter. And Jonathan Harding was in Leverkusen this week and caught up with some Mainz fans. This is Tribuna Weekly. Dave Svinoptorp here with Matt Ford and Jonathan Harding. Matt, take us to the match day.
German Federal League Division 1, Match Day 20. Sports Community Frankfurt United 2. Club for Physical Exercise Prussia Mönchengladbach 0. Football Club Bavaria Munich 5. Gymnastics and Sports Society 1899 Hoffenheim 2. Ball Games Sport Prussia 09 Dortmund 2. Sport Club Freiburg 2. Lawn Ball Sport Leipzig 1. Hamburger Sport Club 1. The First Football Club of Cologne 1. Football Club Augsburg 1. Club for Agility Games Stuttgart 0. Football Club Schalke 04 2. Sport Club Werder Bremen 0. Hertha Berlin Sport Club 0. Bayer 04 Leverkusen Football 2. The First Football Club of Mainz 05 0. Hanoverian Sport Club of 1896 0. Club for Agility Games Wolfsburg Football 1.
So a lot of storylines during this match day. Luckily, you guys helped us pick one of them. But I think the biggest one that we definitely have to talk about is Stuttgart's coaching change. They, of course, fired Hannes Wolf on Sunday, and on Monday they appointed Typhoon Korkut, who, as of this recording, is probably doing his press conference. Now, Jonathan came in here in a really big huff, so I'm just going to pull the pin from this grenade and let it blow up. So, Jonathan, explode.
I'm absolutely bemused, bamboozled, baffled by this decision on so many levels. Hannes Wolf is 36, Typhoon Korkut is 43. You have fired a coach that got you promoted back into the first flight, in the top flight, without giving him the chance to develop along with the team, and replaced him with a man that hasn't proved himself since Hannover. He got 11 points from 11 games at Leverkusen. He was unconvincing. They didn't even really want him. It was just like, oh, we'll give Typhoon a call because he's one of our mates. I do not understand this decision from Stuttgart's perspective. Reschke said, we won't be firing Wolf. Hours later, we fired Wolf. What is happening in the Bundesliga? The perspective of the boardroom towards the coach is a nightmare. It is an absolute nightmare. We are losing the concept of philosophy at football clubs in Germany. Short-sightedness and short-term goals are becoming far more important than having a philosophy, than having a long-term plan in place for the development of individuals and coaches. I do not understand the steps being taken. Stuttgart have got worried here that their top flight status is about to be lost. They've pressed the panic button. They've got rid of a promising coach. Yeah, they haven't been playing well. I'm not going to defend the fact that they haven't looked good and that they were well beaten by Schalke on the weekend. But you have to accommodate for the development of the coach as well as the players. You can't just expect the players to keep getting better and the coach to suddenly be great. It takes time. And like so many clubs we've seen, Cologne did the same thing. They pressed panic, pressed the button and got all excited and got above themselves. What gives Stuttgart the right to suddenly make that decision? I do not understand the long-term sense in this decision. It makes no sense to me whatsoever. And this is not a slight against Typhoon Korkut as a coach per se. I don't think he's very successful. His record certainly suggests that. But I don't understand what this means. Stuttgart don't have a philosophy. What is Stuttgart's identity with this decision? It tells me the same thing it tells me about Borussia Dortmund. What is your identity? You don't have one anymore. That is a worrying trend for the Bundesliga to be developing if the biggest clubs with the greatest traditions and greatest histories don't even recognize themselves anymore because they are so paranoid about their top flight status.
Matt, this was Hannes Wolf's first season in the Bundesliga. Did he need more time?
just recovering from John exploding everywhere then, to be honest. I can only sort of echo and agree with everything John said, but perhaps in a slightly calmer way. Did Hannes Wolff need more time in the job? Yeah, definitely. I think it was a shock that came definitely out of the blue on Sunday morning, especially given that immediately after the defeat, as John said, the sporting director, Michael Ivechka, came out and said, no, there's absolutely no chance that he's going anywhere. And then suddenly he's had this massive change of mind. And I think, to me, that throws up the first of a number of questions which you need to level at Stuttgart, both in terms of their playing style, in terms of the coach, and in terms of the board, and in terms of the club itself, even bigger questions around the whole club itself. The first one being, what caused Ivechka's change of mind in those, 10, 11 hours, if that? And the comments coming out of the club suggest that Wolf himself said, in his words, he was no longer reaching significant parts of the dressing room. And that suggests to me that it was probably some of the older players in that dressing room who didn't seem to be reaching anymore. Iogo started on the bench. Daniel Ginchak started on the bench against Schalke. There seemed to be a complete departure from the style of play which they began the season with. Which was so heavily based on getting the ball wide, pacey wingers, balls into the box. Okay, didn't quite come off with Tarodov and he's then moved on, but in bringing Gomez in, you thought, okay, they want to continue on that same line, albeit maybe the decision was a little bit lazy. But since then, the crosses aren't... There's no crosses into Gomez. I'm not sure what sort of style of play they're supposed to stand for. Does Hannes Wolff, as a young coach, deserve more time to sort of stamp his own philosophy, to develop his own philosophy and stamp it on the team? Yes, probably. And like I said, I think it's also too early to have sacked him. On the other hand, Stuttgart, yes, they've panicked. And yes, they're scared. They've noticed that they've now got 4 points less than they did at the same stage in 2015-16 when they got relegated. So there's clearly a panic there. Earlier on this season, they sold the outsourcing of their professional football club to Mercedes-Benz with the promise of a return to Champions League football, and now suddenly they find themselves in a relegation battle. So there's clearly been they've clearly pressed the panic button there because they've probably got too far ahead of themselves. As John said, you have to ask, what do they want to be on the pitch? That's not been recognisable this season. And what do they want? What do they want to be off it? When they went down, all the comments surrounding Stuttgart was that, oh, they're not a normal second division team. They were deemed too big for it. They were still getting 50,000 in the second division. When they came back up, it was, oh, well, they're not a normal second division team. When they came up, oh, they're not a normal promoted team. Well, they're looking very much like it at the moment. They simply can't compete. They've lost 6 out of 7. They're 3 points clear of relegation. Yeah, it's worrying. Yeah, they're in free fall. But is Typhoon Cork the answer?
I mean, is Typhoon Cork the answer to most questions?
Yeah, but this is the question: is if you're going to fire somebody, it seems like you should have someone that replaces him that could do it better.
If the replacement, and Matt's made some excellent points there, if the replacement is to come in and to get Stuttgart back on course to appease Mercedes, to prove that they're not an ordinary promoted club, to do all of those things, to win back the senior parts of the dressing room, then Typhoon Cork is definitely not that man. It's as simple as that. Yeah, he's from Stuttgart. Yeah, he coached the under-19s in 2011. Is that enough of a reason to make him your head coach in this particularly difficult situation right now? No.
On average, he's got a negative record at every club he's coached. So I really cannot see how, given the signs of life that we're seeing from the teams around them, Cologne showing signs of life, Hamburg got off to a good start under Hollerbach with a point away in Leipzig. Even Werder Bremen hit the bar a few times against Hertha. That could have ended very differently. The teams there showing signs of life. Is Typhoon Korkut gonna give the new impulse which Stuttgart, in their words, want with that appointment? History suggests no. From coming up as not a normal promoted team and almost getting back to where people thought they belong, and the size of that club suggests they do belong in the Bundesliga. All right, they've not shown it so far on the pitch, but I think Hannes Wolff, as a young coach, he needed a lot more time to to show what he had. But it seems ultimately that, given the change of mind, I think this is Wolf himself who's gone to Veszka and gone to the board and said, I'm not reaching this team. I can't turn this around.
But that can only suggest to me that something's gone wrong in the hierarchy there for the head coach to have to admit that situation. You know, all of these signings, I don't know how much of those signings were Reschke signings or Wolf signings. Because as you say, if he's losing the authoritative part of the changing rooms, that suggests to me your Ogos, your Gomez's, were they or are they the types of player that best suit Hannes Wolf's style? Is he still learning what style best suits him? How does he want to play his football? It certainly looked like he was still developing that.
That's an interesting question, because if you look at Michael Reschke's track record, this was his first job as a sporting director. Before that, he was a technical director at Bayern Munich, and before that at Bayer Leverkusen. And what he was best at was recruiting young talents to come to the team. And usually it wasn't his job to make sure that those players develop into superstars. Of course, he brought Julian Brandt over from Wolfsburg to Leverkusen, but it wasn't Michael Reschke that turned him into Julian Brandt. It was the people at Leverkusen that did that.
That's the issue, though, isn't it? And we arrive at a crux point now in football generally, but specifically in Germany. Who's in charge? Who is in charge? Right? And if that's an issue, then maybe Hannes Wolf, we don't know because we weren't in the room at the time, but does he feel like he doesn't have enough authority because Michael Reschke is making these signings? You know, that's obviously maybe something that, I don't know. Does that play a role?
I don't think we can accuse Hannes Wolf of a mistake by letting Simon Terodde go.
No.
I don't think anyone could have predicted that he would have hit the ground running in Cologne the way he has done. However, replacing him directly with Mario Gomez seems to me to smack very much of Reschke seeing this bigger idea of a big romantic footballing return for Mario Gomez to the club where he won the league in 2007.
Well, I think the bigger thing there was that he recruited Mario Gomez. That's who he is. He can recruit players like Mario Gomez to come back to Stuttgart, maybe make less money that he was. I don't know how much Mario Gomez
is
making
now. Right?
And did Hannes Wolf have any say in that?
Yeah. But that's my point. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He scored one goal. It wasn't even his goal. It was an own goal on his debut. He started up front again against Schalke, but I think there was barely a single cross into the box. He had absolutely no service to him. Now, I don't know none of us know how Stuttgart want to play. Are they aiming for a big man up front, in which case maybe they shouldn't have got rid of Simon Terodde, or are they looking to play down the wings with the likes of Ogo and Akolo from left back as they started the season? That seems to have gone out the window as well. So there seems to be a complete lack of identity on the pitch. Can we level that at Hannes Wolf? I think, yeah, possibly. But given he's only 36, does he need more time to do that without having a panicky board ahead of him pressing the panic button? Yeah, I think he deserved that as well. Looking forward, I mean, I worry for Stuttgart now. From looking at a team who they themselves believe that this was it, we're the new professional Valve-based Stuttgart, we've convinced our membership to vote for this outsourcing of the team to give Mercedes-Benz more influence and therefore more money and return Stuttgart to this place in the sun where they always thought they belonged. They've gone from that within the space of a couple of months to how on earth are they going to stay away from that relegation playoff place?
Are they going to stay away from their relegation
playoff
place?
No, I don't think they are. They've turned into another Bundesliga team who is hung up on the past successes of the club. Hamburg is the same.
I think they had tried to get away with that because it was controversial when they went for this outsourcing, but they were able to sell it because Mercedes-Benz is a huge local employer in Stuttgart.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not like they're completely sold out. They're a long-term backer of the club, and they have an historic connection to Stuttgart. So that went through, but it was with the promise of a new professional Stuttgart. But the whole hierarchy of the club, whether it's on the pitch, in the dressing room or at board level, seems to be completely intransparent. Like you said, we don't know what they stand for. We don't know who's in charge. Michael Reschke's got pretty much no track record as a sporting director. And they're now on Typhoon Korkut will be their 14th coach since 2007 when they won the league. Sorry, they tried to get rid of this reputation as a chaos club, Stuttgart, and well, they've not. They're living up to it.
But that's the question. You know, like we've asked ourselves about obviously we don't know about the identity, but how do you get into a position where you keep talking about as a club, well, we need to get back to where we were? How about where you are right now? You know, you are not where you think you should be, but address that. Don't be looking at the fact that you won the league back then. You know, and the only club in the Bundesliga that seems able to do this is Freiburg. Honestly, they seem to recognise their position in the big circus and they do so well with it. They lose players consistently every year. Christian Streich buys into that. He accepts that. The club accepts that. And they keep getting better, or they keep playing well enough. And they keep getting points when people discard them and don't think they're going to play a role. Cologne. Oh, well, we're in Europe. So, you know, we're back on the big time now. No, you're not. Just because you were there once doesn't give you the right to think that you're automatically going to be there every season. Hamburg, we can't escape relegation. Well, we should be in the Bundesliga because we've been here and we've got a clock. That's not a reason. You have to start playing well enough. And here we are again with Stuttgart, who are another example. I genuinely think it's a worrying trend. This constant hanging on to glories of the past and their right to be where they are. You know, you can't have that. You have to evolve. You have to create a philosophy to move forward. And Stuttgart have put themselves in a position with the move with Mercedes to make a positive step forward. Might not have been a popular one, but at least they were saying, we're going to go in that direction. And yet everything they've done in the last month, or in the last 3 days, it seems, has gone completely in the opposite direction. Completely. It makes me worry as well. I just don't see how they're going to stay up.
All right, so like we said last week, we tried something new, which is our Shout from Rosed segment. We put out 3 questions on Sunday, and of course we now wish that we had put a few more questions out there, seeing what happened on Sunday and Monday morning. But we are where we are, and you guys asked us to talk about Roman Bürki's comments after their draw, which felt like a loss for Dortmund, against Freiburg. Roman Bürki said after the game that basically he was hearing whistles from the East and West stands, although he was sure to point out that there was a lot of support from the South Stand, the famous South Stand in Dortmund. And he said, if you don't cheer us, then you might as well stay home. And he has since backed off those comments. He's received a lot of critique from the club itself about those comments. And he says, he basically said in an Instagram post today that it basically the emotions got the better of him and he apologized to the fans. But this is, of course, another huge narrative to what is the crumbling star of Borussia Dortmund. So, Matt, we were working on at the same time when that happened. We were watching the game together. What were your initial reactions to that? Because we didn't actually get to talk about what we actually thought about what he said.
Traditionally speaking, I think that's a line that I think it's accepted, isn't it? As a footballer, you do not cross that line and criticise the supporters who have paid good money to watch you. They've paid that money, they have a right to express their opinions, and as a player, you don't cross that line. And I think, in that sense, Roman Bürki probably crossed that at the weekend. However, this is a lot more nuanced, isn't it?
It's
certainly is complicated. And I've been thinking about this over the past couple of days, and I think it's very much typical and quite endemic of the football culture that we live in. Bürki was particularly talking about an incident quite early in the game, I think within the first 3 or 4 minutes, where a pass went back to him out of Dortmund's midfield rather than playing forward. I can't remember who it was in question, but they played a back pass towards him, which elicited boos and a few whistles and groans from the stands. In Bürki's opinion, the East Stand and the West Stand, they're the two alongside the pitch, the posher seats, you might say. So the fans weren't happy that, because they expected to see an attacking Borussia Dortmund performance. That's what they expect to see. And they weren't happy at that within the first few minutes. And Bürki said, no, we expect more support than just booing. However, I think the problem is we seem to have arrived in a modern football culture where people are so used to consuming their football via little condensed 5-minute highlight reels of skills and incredible moments.
It's
the YouTube clip generation again, to put it in a nutshell. people are consuming these, yeah, these tightly compressed highlights clips of the best players in the world and just little snapshot moments of great pieces of skill from Neymar, from Messi at Madrid, at Man City, at wherever. At the click of a button, it's skills and highlight reels on tap. That's how they consume the football. Suddenly, when they find themselves sat in a football stadium watching an actual game of football for 90 minutes, it doesn't match up. And they get frustrated. And I think that's a problem which seems to be increasing more and more. We can take it as far as to say it's a reason why teams feel so under pressure from their own support to make the changes like we were discussing earlier that Stuttgart have now jumped into with Hannes Wolf. There's clearly a feeling around Stuttgart that we're this massive club that belongs at the top. And we're not reaching that. So, bang, quick decision, panic, sort it out. Going back to Dortmund, I think it's an issue. And another contributing factor to that is the increasing treatment of football supporters as customers consuming a product. Now, fans going to the game might not see themselves as customers and might not see themselves as consumers, and that they're right not to think that. However, the more you treat them as customers, bombarding them with advertising and a product and buy this, buy that, and consume our product, the more they're inevitably or subconsciously going to act like it. And then when they find that the product that they are consuming in front of them doesn't match their expectations, that they've been fed by this constant non-stop Sky Sports media machine, then like any customer consuming any product, they're going to complain. And that's what's led to this. So I think, although Berkey overstepped a traditional line in the sand where you don't criticise the fans who are paying their hard-earned money to watch you, he has got a point when he says, I think the words he used were, "They've not got a clue about football." Okay, maybe that's a little bit harsh.
That's heat of the moment.
That was his emotions taking over. But he has got a point when he's saying, perhaps they've not got a clue about the football they're watching there, because it simply doesn't correspond to the football they're used to consuming at home on their laptops. And that's a problem.
Jonathan, there's obviously a lot of sides to this, and I'm asking you a very general question, and you can choose to answer this in any way you want. But I have obviously an opinion on this question too, but I want to ask it. What was your biggest problem with the entire incident?
Oof, that's a very broad question. I think.
Did you have a problem with the entire incident?
I think Matt makes an excellent point about the overall perspective in the way that, you know, football is, and I hate to use this word, but it is probably the most appropriate, consumed in 2018. I think that plays a huge role in the comments, but that's maybe the biggest issue for me is as much as I agree that you don't cross the line that Matt just mentioned, is that we, in a way, Roman Berkey makes these comments and suddenly we have another star to add to Dortmund's crumbling, you know, image, right? We have another issue, and it gets blown up, you know, and Roman Berkey is a frustrated goalkeeper who arguably, or perhaps some people, I don't think so, but some people will say, made an error in this game that nearly cost them 3 points, right? And he's frustrated because he doesn't like to be lobbed from 45 yards, which keeper would like to be in that situation. He's frustrated because Borussia Dortmund are suffering under the weight of expectation about what this club is. And there's a hardcore group of people supporting Borussia Dortmund that know exactly what that club is to them. And they know what they want that club to be. And they have a really tough time coming to terms with what Borussia Dortmund are growing into. And it comes back to what we're just talking about with Hannes Wolf and Stuttgart and all those other teams. What are Borussia Dortmund at the moment? You know, they have the identity crisis in terms of marketing the team abroad, not able to live under the expectation of being the second best team in Germany, which is an unfair expectation anyway. Let's not forget where they were not so long ago. They nearly died as a club. If it wasn't for the payments that they got from Bayern, they wouldn't be anywhere where they are now. But ever since that Klopp era,
if they hadn't gone on the stock market,
if they'd gone on the stock market, all of these decisions, you know, and if they hadn't won those two titles in the year that Bayern weren't very good, maybe there wouldn't be this rousing sense of expectation. But all of these things are coming together at the same time. Is it any surprise that Roman Berkey is going to get frustrated? And it's interesting because it has a huge impact on the overall philosophy of the club. And I hate to keep coming back to this, but it is absolutely at the core of every single conversation that we have about football clubs. What is the philosophy of Borussia Dortmund? If you can answer that question, Roman Berkey doesn't have anything to say, because the football fans who go to those stadiums don't complain, because they understand what it is to be a Borussia Dortmund fan. And I think right now, that's a very difficult question to answer.
My problem is a lot more specific. Why did Michael Zorc have to say something?
Because
why did he have to respond? He could have handled this internally.
He could have handled
this. He could have.
Absolutely. But
and seeing as how much chaos is surrounding Borussia Dortmund at the moment, I think it was somewhat of a lack of self-awareness in coming out and basically hearing the comments that his goalkeeper said and then coming out with a statement of your own. And maybe the fans feel appreciated that the sporting director came out and said, no, you guys are fine. It's,
but Michael Zorc has to say something, unfortunately. He's a sporting director.
Yeah, but
director.
He can say what he can say.
But he
is
has
we
to say something publicly. No, he has to handle it publicly.
I don't think he does.
No, because Berkey's handled it publicly.
But he has to respond. He can choose to handle it privately.
He can't be seen in the public eye. Because imagine he doesn't say anything publicly and he only does it internally. Then you only have Roman Berkey speaking publicly.
Sure, but you can come up
with it. Or an external perspective, you don't have anyone responding to that from the club. And that's an issue from Michel Zorc's perspective. He has to say something. He's the sporting director. This is one of his players. He has to respond to criticism of the fans that Michel Zorc is also in charge of providing football for, providing the philosophy for.
I think by discussing the rights and wrongs or whether Michel Zorc should have responded publicly or not, I think we're missing the point slightly in that Michel Zorc is the sporting director. He also has a responsibility for the style of play.
My point
which
was,
has gradually started to frustrate the fans who were whistling.
My point is more, I feel like this was blown up a lot. And maybe this was blown up because Roman Berkey said something in the first place. But from my perspective, I think it was blown up even more that Michael Zorc didn't wait to go to his communications department and craft a statement that they could send. They have plenty of fans on social media. They have plenty of ways to get very organized statements out quickly.
Again, I think we're in danger of getting dragged down by technicalities and how that sort of thing should be processed internally.
It comes back to that same point.
I want to go back to that word philosophy, and specifically talking about the actual style of play that Dortmund fans have become used to, especially since Jurgen Klopp. Now, for right or for wrong, Dortmund have in at precisely the same time in which this huge Echte Liebe Borussia Dortmund worldwide phenomenon has exploded, it coincided with the brand of football played by Jurgen Klopp, which, for good or worse, is high tempo, it's full throttle.
It's insane.
It's attack, attack, attack. Yeah, it's insane. And we're seeing it at Liverpool now. They can pull out its insane performances.
Can't defend.
Like against Manchester City one week and then get knocked out of the cup by West Brom the next. Yeah. So they got used to watching that. Since then, you've had Thomas Tuchel coming in with a much slower, tactic-heavy, extremely, perhaps overly philosophical side of football, which just tended to wind everyone up. And now Peter Bosz is a little bit more in between. I think Peter Stöger is, again, a much more conservative coach. And I think this ties into this whole philosophical and identity problem that Dortmund have at the moment. As much as I don't really condone the fans booing, the sort of football they were watching, I think it can be criticised. Yeah, let's start off by saying that Peter Stöger steadied the ship. He came in after a whole run of defeats, two wins on the bounce against Mainz and Hoffenheim before the break. We're looking up again at Borussia Dortmund. But now, since the break, three draws on the bounce, even the two wins weren't particularly spectacular. Three draws on the bounce, which that really should have been 9 points. And then he comes into a game at home against Freiburg, which, for all the qualities that John mentioned before, I'm sorry, but when they come to Borussia Dortmund, Freiburg really should be cannon fodder. But rather than starting one of their best players, Mario Götze, or the more dynamic midfielders, Julian Weigl, he starts with a midfield of Kagawa, Castro, and Nuri Sahin. I'm sorry, there's simply not enough pace, creativity, dynamism in that midfield three. Okay, admittedly, Shinji Kagawa scored 2 goals in 2 games. I'll let Shinji off. But otherwise, it was completely uninspirational. Added to that, in my opinion, bowing down to Aubameyang and started him. For me, he shouldn't have been starting, given the
but that also raises questions, doesn't it? Because is that a Peter Stöger decision? Or is that a, let's play him to mess with Arsenal, you know,
I really don't know, but if Peter Stöger can't influence that decision, then you have to ask questions of Peter Stöger's suitability, his authority.
And the hierarchy of the club.
The hierarchy
of the club
and Peter Stöger's ambition. Another thing that, struck me today, reading around, I wrote a piece on Dortmund before about the whole Aubameyang departure.
Well, we'll get to the Aubameyang departure in a second.
We will. And
let's go back to this.
Give us a chance, it links in. They were talking about Olivier Giroud possibly coming in, but does he want to or not? Batshuayi coming in, but does he want to or not? Who's going to be the Aubameyang replacement? And then suddenly the name Anthony Modeste pops up. Now, to me, as much as Anthony Modeste scored 25 goals for Cologne one season, still not a striker that Borussia Dortmund, with signing a team of that ambition, should be signing.
Yeah, he's already had his career season, right? He's done.
And that, to me, suggests what are Borussia Dortmund's ambitions? Peter Stöger's ambitions? And do the two really match? When Peter Stöger was announced as at least an interim coach, I thought, okay, given his personal achievements with Cologne over the past 5 years, great, the man certainly deserves a chance to show what else he's got. Can he make that step up? I know maybe it's a little bit too soon to judge, but to me, some of his actions, some of his team selections, his treatment of Aubameyang, and then suddenly this rumour that Modeste might be interested in coming back, to me, that smacks of accepting a level to which Dortmund really shouldn't be accepting. They should be aspiring to a lot higher.
Okay, so,
and therefore the fans have a right to be frustrated.
Yeah, so is this also a frustration from Berkey's side about this?
Maybe, but again,
I'm not sure. I think Berkey is a player. No player wants to be booed, but like I said, normally you shouldn't come out and criticise fans, because fans work all week and pay for their tickets, and they have a right to expect to be entertained and watch good football.
It's hard to get tickets, but we come back
to the identity thing again, and I think it's a perfect point to finish on in this topic. And I will say thank you everybody for voting for this one, because it's been a great one to talk about. But there was a game a few years ago at Freiburg, and it works perfectly for the argument, and not just for the sake of it, but for the simple fact that after the game, Christian Streich said at a press conference, there were some people who were booing today when we played football and the way that we played it, and some of the players came in at half time and they didn't understand it, and they were shocked. And those people have nothing to do with this football club, and they have no right to be in this stadium. And you know why Christian Streich can say that? Because Freiburg know exactly what they are. They know exactly what they mean to that city and what they represent as a football club. And if you don't get that, you don't sit in those stands. It's as simple as that. And if Borussia Dortmund can't answer that question right now, that says everything about where the club is, and it might give an answer as to why Roman Berkey felt the need to say what he said.
All right, so we touched on it a little bit. We wanted to also work in. We appreciate, again, guys, voting for the shout from Rosette. We thought it was a good one to start with.
This is definitely a good one, yeah.
But we definitely have to, as Matt touched on, we definitely have to touch on this love triangle that is happening between Borussia Dortmund and two London clubs named Arsenal and Chelsea. We were talking about it off air, we were all just laughing.
Really is a new order.
That's really all the primary colours.
It does seem, though, that Aubameyang is going to leave. He could leave this week. And let's, with maybe a minute or less for each of you, just give your final thoughts on this whole situation with Aubameyang.
I think it's dragged, but I think Dortmund are relieved to get it done. Certainly seems like the player doesn't want to be there anymore. I think in some ways it will lift some aspects of what we've just been talking about identity and maybe issues and for, you know, the way that the club wants to play. I think it's a shame that it took so long to get there, but I think it's very important that they got there. I'm very intrigued to see who the replacement is. I totally agree with Matt. I think it would be baffling for Dortmund to sign Modeste. It would be very short term. And again, it would suggest a lack of identity, long term thinking. Batshuayi would be excellent. Can't see why that wouldn't work. If he doesn't want to go, he wants to go somewhere else. The complications around transfers just leave me absolutely tiresome. I'm tired and I can't be getting into that. But I think it's a good move. Leaves the club as the third all-time scorer for Borussia Dortmund, shouldn't be forgotten. It's quite an achievement for a man that's only been there 5 seasons and is the all-time Bundesliga leading African player, so in terms of goals. So he was a massive player for this club in terms of what he meant. But it's interesting to see how, from arrival to finish, how much your stock can change at a club.
Hey, Matt, your minute on Aubameyang's transfer.
Yeah, I think looking back at his footballing record, you can have absolutely no complaints. He can have no complaints. Dortmund can have no complaints. On the pitch, a great ambassador for the club. Off the pitch, not. I think he soured it, unfortunately.
Yeah,
and we saw the banner on the south stand ahead of the Freiburg game at the weekend saying no player is bigger than our club. That's a group of lads who have a clear identity, a clear idea of what their club should stand for. Where does he go from here? Yeah, Arsenal, okay, yeah, for him, I think that's a half-decent move. I think he'll fit in there quite well. I think that's a style of play that will suit him. Who do they replace him with? Yeah, as we said, Anthony Modeste, no. That would suggest, put big question marks over Peter Stöger's ambition and suitability to manage Borussia Dortmund. Olivier Giroud was one name mentioned. Again, could do a lot of worse. However, he's getting on slightly. And there was the issue that he would apparently prefer a move within London.
Yeah.
And if you end up at Chelsea, that's okay, because you'd be a better option for Chelsea than Peter Crouch or Andy Carroll would. And if that ends up with the third part of the love triangle, Michy Batshuayi ending up at Dortmund, I think they could do a lot worse. And yeah, I would, if I were a Dortmund fan with a big black and yellow heart, I would not be averse to that.
So Jonathan went to Leverkusen to witness the magic powers of Leon Bailey in person and caught up with some Mainz fans after the game. Here is what they discussed.
Leverkusen have just beaten Mainz 2-0, end of match day 20. I'm currently walking to Leverkusen train station with three Mainz fans who don't look very happy. Let's start with why you might not be so happy.
Well, I mean, we lost and we were pretty bad. One of the worst games that I've seen us play. Obviously, I have only been to a few since being here a couple of years ago. But yeah, it was quite limp, and I think the sort of indicative thing at the end of the game was that the Mainz fans, rather than telling the team to score a goal, they're telling the team to shoot on goal, which I thought was quite funny, but at the same time it's quite sad when you're sort of resorting to pointing at the goal to tell them where to go. But yeah, it was just a little bit sort of a foregone conclusion from the off, I think.
True words from Connor, who's been a Mainz fan for
2.5 years or so.
Years. Wow, that's quite a long time. It's aged you.
Yeah.
I think you're right to say about the shot on goal. It got a bit ironic. I thought you played quite well in the first half, and then in the second, just disappeared a bit.
I mean, it was better in the first half. I thought we looked quite solid defensively, but even then, we only created a couple of half chances for Muto, right? Within the first half. But even in the first half, I think Leverkusen were clearly the better team. Most of the game was played in our half. And they probably could have had a couple of penalties in the first half. I think the one that was given in the second was probably less of a penalty than the shots that they had in the first. So.
Agreed. Good support though. Yeah. And you three were amongst it, making all the noise.
Yeah. It was literally just us three going for it all game. But what do you guys think of it? I don't know.
Yeah, it was good. I've been to a couple of Bundesliga games now. This is my second Bundesliga game of the season, another Mainz game. That's probably one of the best atmospheres I've been in Germany, so it was really good, even though Mainz weren't exactly amazing today. So it was great to see. It's good to be part of it. Something a bit different than what we get in England. So.
What does it compare to when you talk about atmosphere in England? What's the difference?
I think it's just the fact it doesn't matter what's going on the pitch. There's always people trying to start chants. Like, even when it's a bit quieter, there's always someone trying to get things going, and things like flags and stuff, and the megaphones do help. Like, they are a bit of a cliche when you think of German football fan culture, but it does help trying to create an atmosphere, and I think that is always a good thing. There's been a lot of games I've been to this year in England which have just been so flat. It's just nice to go somewhere where it's just the whole end is really trying to make an atmosphere. And I think that is something that England could learn a lot from German fan culture, really.
Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, and you say that after just losing as well. So it does say a lot about the support that you guys have had and that you were a part of, that even in defeat, there's still a sense of being a team.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing that's really different between England and Germany as well is that, I mean, we turned up to the game about 2 hours before, and from about an hour and a half before the kickoff, like, Mainz fans are really going for it in the home end, in the away end. So I don't know whether they'd be in the home end, but yeah, they were singing quite a lot, and it just got progressively louder up until kickoff, and then sort of just like complete euphoria in the stands. before the game, then sadly the game didn't really match it, but it was really, really like loud, which I mean most people in England I think just tend to turn up maybe 5-10 minutes before kickoff, get the pie and sit down, which I mean I'm like leveling the abuse at myself when I'm at English games, but yeah. But yeah, like I don't know, I think that's the big thing, like it's more of an event, and people actually sort of are like, right, we're going to bring our best and like try and actually make a bit of an afternoon of this.
Is that what makes you guys come over, you know, more than maybe the team or the results, or is it just the fact that there's a certain atmosphere that you don't get at home?
Yeah, I think so. And another thing I think about English fans is a lot of the time I feel like they expect to be entertained and they won't make a noise unless the entertainment is there on the pitch, whereas in Germany it's kind of more about making the entertainment in the stand. I think that does make you want to come over more and watch something a bit different and enjoy a bit of a different culture and a bit of a different atmosphere. And I just find it a bit better, just a bit more enjoyable, especially when it was as bad for Mainz on the pitch today. It's nice to go away and feel like you did actually enjoy your day no matter what the result is.
But there's a lack of spontaneous, you know, singing, which as someone who's a Leeds United fan, you sort of enjoy a chance replying to the away fans or the home fans, which you don't get here at all. The only time I've ever experienced it is in there was one point in the Freiburg block that I was watching against Werder Bremen when they started singing about how lovely Freiburg is as a city because they were 3-0 up. But that was the only occasion where I've seen something where they're not listening to the megaphones. Yeah,
no, it's interesting though to talk about the differences between fan culture and how you experience a match day. Obviously with the Bundesliga now trying to become, you know, the next Premier League, do you think that if they keep going down this route about, you know, getting more money through TV and stuff like that, will it make the experiences that you've had today less frequent?
Well, I mean, definitely if they go down the exact way the Premier League and go for all-seaters, then it wouldn't be as exciting. I think you get so much energy in the stands by standing up. That's one of the main things that's really exciting about like being in the Bundesliga, is that you're watching like elite level football, but you're having like the same sort of experiences you might be having in the stands if you're going to like a League Two game in England. So like obviously a lot louder, but like you're stood up and just like having a really good time. So I really enjoy that from that perspective. So you've got the elite sport side of it, you've got like the sort of a bit more of an authentic experience. I think if they keep going pushing like this route of like trying to become like the Premier League, you might lose a bit of the authenticity of it, but at the same time, they would have a long way to go to actually erode all of that. I mean, it's taken about 25, 30 years for sort of English football to sort of be like get to the sanitised point that it is now. Yeah. And I'm not sure if Germany would go quite that far. So I don't know. It's a difficult balance to pay off, but yeah, I think at the moment it's still sort of a nice like different thing to do rather than go to an English Premier League game.
You heard it here first. Germany is not going to go as far as the Premier League. Well, I can't thank you enough, guys. Wonderful, wonderful day, even if the football wasn't wonderful. Thank you so much. This is goodbye from another grey and dark day in Germany, which just seems like to be the case every day of late. I'm Jonathan Harding, saying goodbye, along with
Connor Garrett.
Sophie.
Dan.
Look at that. The dream team. Connor, Sophie and Dan. All here for Mainz's defeat to Leverkusen, but they had a great day anyway. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is what matters.
Please leave us a friendly review. That'll do it for this week's edition of Tribuna Weekly. You can subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts. And if you like, you can also like our Tribuna Podcast Facebook page, Tribuna Podcast. You can find Matt Fort at Matt_4D, Jonathan Harding at JohnBlog66, 2Ds and 2Sixes, and I'm at Davis_Venaccio. Before we go, here is our stat of the week. For a split second, Frankfurt were in second place in the Bundesliga, well, until Schalke and Leverkusen played their games. But nonetheless, that was the first time they were in second place since October of 2012. Thanks for listening, and we hope to hear from you next week.